Welcome to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott-Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? You can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Lena Arash producing the show. Thomas Drantz, my co-host here. How are you, Thomas?
I'm doing okay. I didn't really enjoy the game last night, to be totally honest with you. I thought it was pretty dull.
Fair enough. It was.
Yeah, it was a low-event contest, a hard-fought. I thought the Canucks... It's an interesting one because the reaction in the marketplace, and I think there's some validity to it, was it pretty hostile, it felt like. It felt like there's a lot of pressure, a lot of criticism for this team. There's a lot of things that fans are unhappy about. And yet, you know, sort of you zoom out 30 feet and... I mean, they played two games as the less rested side on the road against pretty good competition.
Yep.
And, you know, very easily could have closed out the one in Utah and lost a one-goal game with the game really twisting on a weak goal from Alex Pietrangelo. I mean, great shot. Must have been a 95-mile-per-hour slapper, so weak goal is relative, but an unscreened point blast.
Yeah.
That really swung that game. I mean, it's not... The sky's not falling. It just feels like it.
Yeah, the heat is turned up real high right now. So let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
We will start with the headlines. The Canucks lose to the Vegas Golden Knights. 3-1, empty net goal late for Vegas. Canucks on a brief two-game road trip back-to-back. They get 1 point out of a possible four. So you kind of went over it there, but takeaways from these two games. It did feel like, hey, against Utah, I know you were kind of on Twitter talking about it, but it felt like, hey, maybe they should have closed that game out because they had a two-goal lead late. But that being said, Utah was pressuring heavy and often late in that game, and it kind of felt like they were almost inevitable. And then Vegas last night, it was a dull game, but I do think Vegas controlled play there, especially in the second half as well.
Well, also, Utah was coming in the second part, especially of that third period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were very seriously pressuring the Canucks, loading up offensive zone time. The Clearsight Analytics had them with 7 high danger scoring opportunities, like high percentage scoring opportunities in that third period. I mean, there's a big difference for me between what we saw in terms of the Canucks couldn't close out the game in Utah, in terms of the quality of chances that Utah generated and the amount of duress that they put the Canucks under, and what the Canucks were able to generate against Vegas last night.
Yeah.
Like, if the Canucks had gotten the tying goal, we would have been like, that was lucky.
Against Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I think to say the same about Utah is to misunderstand what we watched, where Utah kept attacking off the rush, kept finding seams, kept skating into high-danger scoring areas all game long, and really turned it up and started to actually execute without hesitation. Like, they got a fortunate goal, the Gunther game-tying goal, but the amount of pressure that they were generating, I mean, that was manifest different than what the Canucks did to Vegas last night. And that's sort of, I think, where the real concern lies, right? The getting off the rails thing on and on, the personality conflicts thing, even the Rick Tocchet system is limiting thing. I'm selling on all of that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of it being, now I'm not selling on it as if it's not real, but I'm selling on it as like a reason this team is losing. Like, you're a football fan.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, a teammate, said on the radio this week that they're no longer friends. They used to be friends. They're no longer friends. Both had to address it at length.
Yeah.
And then A.J. Brown went off.
Yeah. And that happens in football like all the time.
All the time.
Receiver's like, I'm not happy. And then he gets fed the ball and he's happy.
Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of teammates around professional sports that aren't besties. You know, like, I don't buy that's a reason that this team is losing or inconsistent or why it sometimes looks like they're not competing for one another night to night. I'm not buying it. What I do think is really happening, though, is I'm trying to figure out why, but the ability to generate anything at all is absent from what the Canucks are doing. We talked about it a little bit on the radio yesterday. I put a tweet out about it, but no team is generating fewer looks at 5-on-5 right now in the NHL across a 17-game sample now than the Canucks are. And they showed progress in the first 15 games of the year. And when you look at it, like, a lot of it is actually Quinn Hughes. With Quinn Hughes on the ice in the first 15 games of the year, Canucks were generating 36 shots an hour, which is, you know, that makes you dangerous. When the Canucks had that five-man unit on the top at the top of the lineup on the ice at 5-on-5, it was like you could feel it. You know, you can feel it when a team's generating ozone time and putting pressure on their opponents and generating looks. You're like, oh man, this looks inevitable. They're going to break through here. Whether that chance is saved or not, or whether that play goes off or not, or whether they miss a shot or make a shot, whatever. You can tell it's coming. And that number's dropped like 27, 26 from Hughes over the last 15 games. Part of that's Hronek's absence, but I struggle to imagine that Hronek's impact on Quinn Hughes is 10 shots per hour. That's too big. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. You've got guys like Miller, right, who we know hasn't beat a goaltender for a non-empty net goal in 14 games now, since November 26th, or October 26th, excuse me. He's won 5-on-5 goal on the season. He's gone from mid-30s shot rate, on-ice shot rate, to 19.
Yeah.
And then the bottom six, like the bottom six might be scoring goals, and I know that the sort of line out there is the bottom six is carrying the top. No, the Canucks aren't generating with anyone on the ice. The actual exception is Pettersson and DeBrusque, who sort of are unchanged in this segment versus what they were in the first segment. But I think a lot of that is that in the first segment, they weren't logging a lot of minutes with Quinn Hughes. And in the second segment, it includes a 10-game absence from Miller, in which they were logging a ton of minutes with Quinn Hughes. So,
yeah.
You know, like, there's no line that is regularly playing in the offensive zone. There's no pair that's regularly playing in the offensive zone. And the Canucks are struggling to get up ice. And by the way, and one of the moments that was really uncharacteristic last night, because we've seen this team under Rick Tocchet be masters of the end game state, right? Like, last 2-3 minutes, Canucks trailing. How many times do we see it in the playoffs? How many times have we seen it this season, right? This team's going to set up shop. They're going to get looks. They're going to take their best shot at tying the game. It's polished. It's professional. It's well rehearsed. They do it just about as well as anybody in hockey. The last 2-3 minutes, this team, we know this about the Canucks. They have the onions. They're tough to kill. And then last night, they look completely discombobulated in that last minute. Right, there's no stoppages, I think, for 3.5 minutes. It's the Soucy-Juulsen pair on the ice. There's apparent confusion from Miller, from Lankinen. Lankinen starts to leave the net, doesn't leave the net. This is one where I really wish I'd been there to ask people about it post-game, but what I think happened from watching the tape is that Rick Tocchet didn't want to change and do the let's change our goalie, let's pull our goalie while we're in our own zone.
Yeah.
So we have an extra guy to support for a retrieval and on the breakout because we don't have Quinn Hughes on the ice.
And teams generally, like, they don't do that as much anymore. Like the start from your own zone with the goalie out thing.
Well, I think it's caught back on because of the Canucks, but like the Canucks did it so well in the playoffs last year that I think it's become somewhat more common. But you know, I don't know if there was miscommunication between the players on the ice and the coach, but that's what it looked like. That's what it looked like. Lankinen leaves, he stops, he leaves. And then you've got Carson Soucy leading a breakout. 6-on-5 against Vegas.
Which is always a good strategy.
How do you think that turned out?
It didn't turn out well.
They never gained the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
And Vegas didn't even need to score on like a long distance shot. You know, that's like a 40% chance of going in. It was a breakaway, a Brett Howden breakaway to seal the game. And so this is also where you bump into this thing. Like, Brännström's play fell off, don't get me wrong. So I'm not trying to blast Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote and company for removing Brännström from the lineup. But I want to talk about Brännström not based on his recent performance, but based on what he did bring when this Canucks team was generating offensively, right? Having like this third pair driver who was eating tough minutes, you know, the way you or I eat Lucky Charms for breakfast.
Yeah. More in the of a early, Reese's Puffs guy, but that's fine.
In the early portion of the season, gave them some secondary
oomph
push.
Yeah.
Like just a guy who could turn the milk chocolate in your cereal bowl.
Yes.
And they don't have that right now, right? Like Hughes was playing last night with Tyler Myers. You had a Soucy-Juleson pair, and you had Forbert and DeHarnay. And no kidding, Rick Tocchet didn't want to pull his goalie with possession. Like, he wanted to gain the zone before pulling his goalie. No kidding. No kidding. Like, they only have one puck mover. Who do you even play when you're trailing? Who should even be on the ice other than Hughes and Myers?
It's just Hughes and Myers, and that's the issue.
It's just Hughes and Myers.
And that's the issue. Like, even when Brännström lately has been playing, it's like, well, I don't think he has the trust of the coach right now, too, because his play has kind of fallen off lately, and it's... You just have so few options, especially with Filip Hronek out, and it just leads everyone to the conclusion of, the obvious conclusion of, like, hey, this team needs another puck mover in the top four. And just to put numbers on it, so yesterday, in the second and third period combined, obviously the Canucks were tied and then trailing for part of that. They had one high-danger chance, 4 at 5-on-5. And that was in the second period. In the third, they had 0 at 5-on-5, but they did have 1 while on the penalty kill, which is just, it's not a recipe for success if you're the Vancouver Canucks. And it does feel like this all has kind of devolved into a Team Pettersson versus Team Miller thing. And it just, like, it doesn't make sense. It's sad because neither of them are playing well. It's like watching, like the Mike Tyson fight, when you went into it all excited and you're like, wow, this is going to be great. And then it was bad and it was disappointing. But they're both Mike Tyson. Like, they're both bad and they're both disappointing. And it just, the vibes are completely off. Neither of them are playing well. So even like when you're looking at the defense and you have no puck movers to help them, it's like, even if you had a puck mover to help them, they're not doing enough offensively to even make that worth it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's true. I actually think there's a sense internally that the market's focus on the defense is missing the point, that so many of their forwards are struggling, and that the team's play as a five-man unit is causing them to spend too much time in their own end, which is exposing the deficiencies on the defense, and as a result... But you know what? I see that point, and yet I think the loss of Hronek becomes catastrophic because... this team doesn't have enough puck moving, right? It's like, it's one of those things where, like a glass jaw thing, where this is a punch. Losing Miller versus losing Hronek. Consciously, what do we think should impact the team to a greater degree? Losing Miller.
Yeah.
And yet, because the Canucks still have Pettersson and Pew Suter, who can go up to the second line and be fine, and Blueger to play third line center, and Atu Ratu, at least he'll come up and play low event hockey.
He'll win some faceoffs.
They're worse than Miller, but their baseline without him is higher, right? You lose Hronek, and it's the punch you can't take. It's the glass jaw effect, where all of a sudden, you've got Myers playing with Hughes, which means you don't have... Myers, who is your best bet other than Brännström to have some secondary puck moving on another pair. So you've got this, you know, bottom four group on your defense that's going to go glassing out or is going to need to slowly engineer their way up the ice with short area passes,
mm-hmm.
or you're cooked. And so Brännström falling off at the exact time that Hronek got hurt, I think it's the primary driver. As much as the Canucks need more from their top forwards, as poorly as a lot of them are playing, Besser, I think, has been very quiet since returning from the head injury. I hope it's not a performance impact thing. We often see that guys returning from head injuries or brain injuries is what we should probably call them, can take a little bit of time to ramp back up, especially when they're finishers. We've seen it time and time again across sports, frankly. Miller's back, but he's not back as the JT Miller he's been for much of the past five seasons in Vancouver, at least based on the first five games. It's quiet around him. Elias Pettersson, I thought, played really well defensively against Vegas, but, you know, the imperious attacking Elias Pettersson remains on a wanted poster, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, but I fundamentally think the inability to move from the back end out is what's driving the fact that this team can't generate a lick. And what happens when you can't generate a lick? You're playing Utah. You get a 2-goal lead, but that never becomes a 3-goal lead. They make it 2-1, but it never becomes 3-1. You never give yourself that cushion. This team always extended leads last season. Granted, a lot of it was a shooting percentage-based mirage, but nonetheless, like, they had enough juice. They had enough going right that they were able to extend leads. And then if you get the Gunther bouncer against you, it's not fatal. And likewise, you know, go watch Edmonton's third period against Boston. And there's like 7 sick plays a shift leading to scoring chances of various quality before McDavid takes a can opener to the Bruins defense because he's Connor McDavid. And as Leon Draisaitl told him afterwards, you're the GOAT, you're a legend on the bench. The distinction between what the Oilers did to the Bruins last night in the third period and what the Canucks looked like against Vegas could not be wider. It looks like a different sport. I fundamentally think that's down to the defense. Before we move on to the rest of the whiteboard, I do want to suggest a solve.
You're okay? Going to solve the problem right now?
A Hail Mary solve.
Wow.
Okay? This is what I'd like to see the Canucks try, or what I at least think they should be talking about and considering. I know he's played poorly for about 4 weeks, but throw Eric Brandstrom on the top pair with Quinn Hughes. Now, here's why. When Quinn Hughes plays with another true puck mover, whether it's Philip Hronek at the high end or Ethan Bear on the low end, this team starts to generate at a totally different, like, decibel level. Puck movers amplify other puck movers. We've seen this repeatedly. It's why Thomas Harley and Miro Heiskanen has been a thing occasionally in Dallas, with Heiskanen playing his best hockey in those minutes. It's why Taves and Makar are going to be the top pair for Team Canada. Like, you have to be protective of the Hronek effect, which was the Bear effect before it was the Hronek effect. Like, we've seen, you don't need to be a Philip Hronek caliber player to exert that type of impact on Quinn Hughes, right? The Canucks have no one else who can do it except Brandstrom. And in the absence of it, they are dead in the water offensively. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to require the coaching staff to be malleable and play a lefty on the right side. It's going to require them to empower a player who they've tried get playing in the top four and it hasn't always looked good. It's a Hail Mary shot.
It's definitely a Hail Mary.
But this team needs it. This team needs it. The extent to which their top gear, and like, forget falling off, it's fallen out of the vehicle. They've left it 3 exits behind them on the highway. Demand something drastic. This is what I'd like to see. I can't see anything else internally that even has a shot at solving the issue.
I want to disagree, but also I'm like, I can't think of anything else. Well, like, there's no other options, because the only other option would be moving Tyler Myers off and putting like Noah Juulsen back with Quinn Hughes, which, to your point, just like the puck moving, obviously Hughes is going to be fine, but as a pair, it's just not going to be at the level you want it to be. I doubt the coaching staff would ever go for that. As you mentioned, they would have to be a lot more malleable than they've shown. And I question how Brandstrom would do in top 4 minutes. But at a certain point, it's like, I guess shoot your shot, man. Do something to try to change things up, because right now it isn't going well. On to the broadsheet. So Rick Dhaliwal was on Halpern and Brough this morning. The roster freeze is obviously in effect now across the NHL. But what Rick Dhaliwal did say is he says he still thinks Bowen Byram is one of the Canucks' targets. Speaking of puck moving on defense, that would be interesting. I wanted to ask you, what do you think the price for Bowen Byram is going to be? Because everything I've seen makes it feel like it's higher than I would be comfortable paying for someone like Bowen Byram. Because for me, I look at it and I'm like, well, I'd give like a first and a roster player with upside. But it kind of seems like they're holding out for something that's going to be much larger than that if they're going to move on from Bowen Byram.
Look, I mean, Bowen Byram a year ago with a sort of more durability concerns because he'd missed more time that season, returned Casey Mittelstadt
who's
in like a trade all out. Yeah. Right? Like straight up trade for Casey Mittelstadt, who is really good. I mean, we're talking about a 26-year-old legitimate center.
Yeah.
Who's
like a second line, clear second line center.
Yeah, I mean, he has 59 and 57 points in consecutive seasons and is well on his way to repeating that again. So we're talking about a 60-point skilled center with power play value in his mid-20s who had a year of control left on his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what do you think is too expensive?
If I'm the Canucks, I don't know if I go... Like, I don't know if I go to Willander levels for Bowen Byram, I guess is my limit. Like, I do a prospect, I do a first-round pick, I combine a bunch of stuff to try to make that work, but I don't go to a Willander Lekkomäki.
The Canucks poo-poo platter special. That's what they'd like to do,
exactly.
Too. I promise you that. Here, Calgary, here's a bunch of stuff.
Take some guys. Hope it works out. But, like, that's the thing. Mainly, I just wouldn't move Willander or Lekkomäki for Byram because I want a more surefire, better fit player. And maybe it's not even a better fit because I do think there's a fit here for Bowen Byram. What I would want, though, is some term and some certainty on the contract. And that's something that Byram doesn't have. And that would kind of be my concern, especially because he's, from all accounts, wants to be the number one guy wherever he goes. I don't think he's going to be that on a good team. Like, if he gets traded to a decent team, there's no team out there that would bring him in as their number one defenseman and be like, we're a contender. But he can go somewhere and probably be a number one defenseman and get paid like it if he wants to play on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, he's an RFA after this season, so you're at least getting team control. It's not an expiring contract.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of stipulations where you can agree to a trade pending, you know, the outcome of conversations between the player and the team who's acquiring him on a contract. Maybe that's the route that you sort of take.
Isn't that not allowed anymore?
Like, no, you're well within your rights to do that. If a team grants you permission, even if you just have a perfunctory conversation, there's no problem with that. So, I mean, there's all sorts of ways to go about this. Personally, I think Lekkomäki or Willander for a 23-year-old established defender can play either side. Has won a Stanley Cup in the past, dominating the playoffs. I mean, I still think there's risks associated with Byram, but. Yeah, that's something I would strongly consider if I were the Canucks. And, you know, I think they should. Again, we're talking about a guy who just got traded for a 60-point mid-20-year-old skilled center who shoots right-handed. Like,
Mittelstadt, left-handed.
Left-handed, excuse me.
So that value is in the tank.
That value is gone.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm wrong. Yeah, yeah, you know what? You don't have to pay anything for him. Price is way inflated. Anyway, I do like the idea of... I think at the end of the day, I think you need to be willing to take a swing. I think the bigger question for me, honestly, Josh, and we can get into this more in one of the open segments on the other side of the break, but the bigger question to me is, at what point do you look at this season or look at the performance of this team and maybe conclude that you need to keep your powder dry as opposed to pushing more assets into the center of the table?
I was having the same thought today, so we can get into it. On the other side, just to update the playoff odds, Canucks at 88% according to Dom's model at The Athletic to make the playoffs, down 2% from yesterday.
So, yeah, so the sky is not falling.
Yes.
Despite
it's
the mood
all okay
in this market at the moment. Club is also still projected in the model to hit more than 100 points. However, I do want to note, for most of this season, the Canucks have been tied with teams like Vegas and Winnipeg and Minnesota in terms of their Stanley Cup odds. The Canucks Stanley Cup odds, however, today are now at 20-1, tied with the LA Kings. You can get the Lightning, the Capitals, and the Wild at shorter odds, 17-1. The Vegas Golden Knights and the Jets at 15-1 in the area that the Canucks used to reside. 12-1 for the Avs, 11-1 for the Hurricanes, Panthers, Maple Leafs, and Stars, 10-1 for the Devils, and 6.5-1 for the Oilers, who I don't know how many Oilers games our listeners are watching, but they look like the best team in hockey again and are probably going to ride out the season at something like a 775 to 800 point percentage given their quality of play over the past 3 weeks. I think they're back,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Very annoying. They are very good.
Sucks.
Canucks Talk brought
to you. Except it's really fun to watch, unfortunately.
It is. Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. On the other side, we'll get into more of this. Josh Elliott, Wolf Thomas Strand, Sportsnet 650.
From December 12th to 24th, shop savings up to 60% off. Find amazing deals on top brands such as Nike, Under Armour, Oakley, Columbia, and more. Say it with sport this holiday season.
This festive season, Oak Ridge Park is proud to support local charities such as Canuck Place Hospice and the YWCA, spreading holiday joy throughout the community. Spanning 28 acres, Oak Ridge Park will open in summer 2025.